Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight. It is our weekly podcast just around what's going on in and around the South African economy. And for today on episode 52, we are focusing on state-owned enterprises, and we are going to be having quite a good discussion around that. My name is Mudiwa Gavaza, and I'm joined on the line by Carol Payton, who is a writer-at-large for the Business Day, and in studio by Natasha Marion, who is a deputy editor for the Financial Mail. Starting off with South African Airways, that's been the big news for the last two or so weeks. Could you, you know, perhaps give us an update of where we are at the moment? I understand that by this weekend we might be, you know, returning to, you know, programming as normal.
Yes, I'm not sure if it's absolutely as normal. But certainly the strike is at a very crucial stage now, in which for the strikers, if they don't manage to hold the strike over the next 2 days, I'd say it's over for them and they won't have gained anything. So I think that SAA is slowly getting on top of the issue, and I think that some people are returning to work. So they are getting more and more flights going. And I think it's just important for them in terms of the psychological battle that goes on, that they try and, you know, get things back to normal as much as possible.
On that, I'm just interested to know, you know, from what you can see and the way that things have developed over the last couple of weeks, is this a labor issue, or is this just, you know, perhaps maybe another notch in the belt of this continuing saga around SOEs, mismanagement and all that?
Well, I think it's both. So I think as far as the employees themselves go at SAA, for them this is a wage dispute. And but I think that the involvement of NUMSA, who organises quite a lot of people in aviation, has kind of changed things, because they're much more political and they're much more ambitious than just getting the straight wage dispute. So for them, this is part of the big fight that they're going to have with government over state-owned enterprises and, you know, the private participation and privatization and all of those things. So it's got a very big kind of consequence in terms of how it plays out for both NUMSA, who are very ambitious and think they are in a fight against the state, and also for the state, which needs to kind of fix these SOEs, which does mean cutting costs.
Natasha, I'm just interested to know, like, given what Kara has just said, I guess the bigger question is there still a place for such a heavily subsidized airline in South Africa? Like, I think, because I think, you know, broader speaking, that's perhaps the question that Parliament and the state and province ministry, these are the type of questions that they're probably asking themselves.
It looks like the perception around it has changed quite considerably, because what we've seen in the ANC at the last NEC meeting was, you know, people actually standing up and saying, well, this is actually not a working class initiative. It's, you know, it's for the middle class and the upper middle class. So why are we putting so much money into it? You know, there's estimates that over the years SAA has sort of sucked in 55 billion rand in bailouts.
Wow.
since its formation. It's a figure Sikonathi Mantshantsha calculated in his piece this week.
Yeah.
So I think there's a shift in the importance of owning a national carrier, recognition that it's sort of a vanity project. I mean, we can see from Tito's comments in the medium term, Tito Mboweni's comments in the medium term budget, when he said, you know, this is, you know, what about people on trains when trains get stuck and come late? And then Minister Pravin Gordhan last week as well said SAA is not too big to fail. So there definitely seems to be an appetite among those in powerful places, and a shift in perspective around the ownership of SAA.
Carol, do you agree the fact that transport-wise, SAA is not the only, you know, part of the state owned enterprises that has issues. We've seen Metro Rail. There was that famous day when the president took the train in the morning and it was delayed. So should we be making this much of an issue about SAA, or having, a bigger discussion around how state-owned transport systems are working at the moment?
Yeah, exactly. You know, PRASA is deep in crisis. It's underinvested. It's badly managed. There remains corruption. Hardly anyone has been called to book for any of the things that have gone down there. And yes, this is the main form of transport for the working class in the Western Cape, Gauteng, and in KZN, and the cheapest. So, yes, absolutely. To be pouring billions into SAA when the needs are so great at PRASA, and then you have the fact that such a large number of people are using taxis which are not even subsidized, doesn't make sense. It belongs to a kind of different era, and I think that it is time to move on. Apart from the fact that running an airline has now become a completely different kettle of fish to what it was, you know, 25 years ago.
Yeah.
Because the competition from the Gulf carriers is enormous, and you just really can't compete with those guys. They just squeeze you out the market.
It's been asked time and time again, can we just sell it now? Can it go?
You know, the question I have is, who'd want to buy it?
Oh, wow.
You know, the president said last week that they were looking at an equity partner for SAA. I'm not sure how far that went. The SAA yesterday in their briefing mentioned that they're not going to approach the government for any more bailouts, but they are going to approach the banks. So I think, you know, that's the question for government now. You know, if you really want to act on this, just sell it. I mean, but I think the question they will face, or the difficulty they will have, is that it's, you know, it's one official actually said that it's now trading recklessly already.
Mm.
So who would want to buy something that's not actually a going concern? Mm-hmm. Carol would actually also be better placed to respond to that.
As you're responding, Carol, I have a question that you know, I'd like to get both of your inputs on, and it's, I really don't understand, like, the things that go on at SAA. I mean, just from a business model point of view, it's a cash business, right? There's no one who's flying, let's say, from Durban to Cape Town on credit, you know? And most of the time, because one of the things that came out of yesterday's briefing, I think they said they need a 2 billion rand loan for working capital and the like. And usually when you hear such things, companies that have working capital issues is where you're getting paid 30, 60, 90 days later on, and you need money to bridge you in the interim. But at SAA, it's like a taxi. No one's flying on credit. Like, everyone is paying cash for the everyone's paying cash before the airplane, you know, leaves the ground. So why have such issues when there's so much money coming in?
Exactly, and I think obviously the problem is that the revenue doesn't meet the operating expenses. So that's the big problem, is that they actually aren't making enough money on all of those flights, because the expenses are too high. And as you probably have noticed, that if you try and buy a flight anywhere really in the world, or domestically, SAA is not going to be the cheapest. So I think it's the issue of their cost structure that they have to get right. So if they are going to sell it, they have to fix the cost structure. That's also why the strike is so important.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to sell an entity that has this huge, enormous workforce that is not very productive. So you have to get those things right if you're wanting to sell.
Yeah, I agree with Carol. SAA is needed to be restructured years ago. They actually supposed to have announced the Section 189 2 years ago.
Yeah.
But because of because of how deep SAA was embroiled and part of the state capture project, they never did. So, you know, the fear and the difficulty that that arises now is, you know, even if you want, you have the appetite to sell, who do you sell to? And even if you have the appetite for an equity partner, you know, that's also been proven to be challenging.
So we're just going to take a quick break. We'll be back on the other side of this, and we're going to shift focus to another SOE just to see what's going on there, because there have been some leadership shakeups at Eskom. We'll be back on the other side of this.
The cryptocurrency revolution is a rabbit hole that goes deeper than just Bitcoin and blockchain. South Africa's revolutionary cryptocurrency investment platform, Revix, presents Beyond Bitcoin, your guide to the crypto future. Unpack the news, trends, and terminology live every Monday on The Gareth Cliff Show on cliffcentral.com. You can also download every episode on the Cliff Central app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. This is the Business Day Spotlight. I'm in studio with Natasha Marion, who is Deputy Editor for the Financial Mail, together with Carol Payton, who is our Writer-at-Large at the Business Day. And we are talking about SOEs. Just before the break, we were talking about South African Airways, what's been going on there. And we both had Carol and Natasha saying that there's a lot of issues at the national carrier. And one of the big conversations at the moment is where does the airline actually fit into the greater, you know, transport landscape, especially given the greater problems that are being faced by South Africans on a daily basis, and that, you know, the issues, you know, of subsidizing such a big airline, it's something that the government really, really needs to grapple with going forward. But just switching over to the news of the week, a somewhat surprise announcement of a new CEO for Eskom, and I know that there's been a bit of controversy, and I think Carol has been following this one quite a bit. Carol, do you think, my main question is, do you think he's going to be allowed to do his job?
It's quite worrying, because you've already got the union saying, like, you know, this is war, and we don't welcome this guy. And then you have got, as you know, a very interfering shareholder. So that was one of the difficulties that the last CEO faced, that you know, he tried to do things, and when he tried to do the things that needed to be done, he got sort of, you know, redirected by the shareholder. So I think that it's a very, very difficult job, not just because of the actual job itself and the need to sort of operationally sort of fix Eskom, but also because you've got these dynamics, these political dynamics, which you're going to have to be very, very skilled at navigating.
Just for those that perhaps don't know yet, can you give us just a little bit of background just around the new CEO and perhaps some of the contentions that people are having, you know, as to whether this was the best candidate or not?
Well, I think the big issue really is around his skills. And I think there is a secondary issue around his race. But the first issue around the skills is the fact that he's not an engineer. And especially on the board, hasn't had an engineer. And that's been one of the things they've really identified as a big sort of gap. So it was surprising that they chose someone who's not an engineer. He does have operational experience, so that's important, because really the thing that needs to be done at Eskom is you need to fix the operations. Again, also the cost structure, and that goes to your operations and needing to fix operations. And he has had experience in operations, so that's good. But nothing is nearly as big as this. And then I think the second issue around his race is that people felt, well, if you weren't going to choose an engineer with, you know, incredible experience in the industry, and you were just going to choose someone who's run-of-the-mill CEO, who's a lawyer, which is what he is, then why did we have to go for a white person? So I think there's a lot of slack around it. And I feel, yeah, the guy's not really going to get a fair shake of doing the job. And I think that also he's coming in at a time when, you know, things have been neglected for so long. I think that government's been very remiss in bringing along the unions in the way they needed to. So the unions are already, you know, pumping up for a war. And that is not something he's going to be able to handle on his own. So, yeah, it's a very worrying choice, I think, from those points of view.
In terms of getting it right, how important do you think Eskom still is to the government? They've just come out of an election cycle, so they've been given a bit of breathing room for the next maybe 4 or 5 years. Do you think election cycle wise getting it right is an important issue at the moment, or is it something that we'll probably see some noise about, you know, a year or two before the next election?
I just think it's imperative that the government gets it right, period, for the country, for the economy. You know, they've been, if Eskom is too big to fail, if Eskom fails, the economy fails, the country fails. So it's not even an election issue. I mean, you know, I mean, that should be the last thing on anybody's mind, because it's that critical to the economy. So I and that's why I think that the unions are a little bit remiss in thinking that they could treat SAA as a dry run for the battle at Eskom, because of the importance of Eskom compared to SAA. You know, SAA, like we said, it's a vanity project, while Eskom is sort of at the heartbeat and the pulse of the economy. Mm. So my view is that they were a little bit remiss in thinking that it could have been a dry run for the battle at Eskom. But yeah, you know, it is critical that Mr. De Reiter succeeds, I think. That's you know, politically, that's why we saw the ANC welcoming his appointment, while President Cyril Ramaphosa and Minister Pravin Gordhan's opponents in the ANC immediately jumped on the race issue. Mm. But what we need to remember is that irrespective of the race, this individual has to succeed.
Yeah. Okay. And then as we come to the end of the discussion, Carol, I wanted to, you know, perhaps get your thoughts on what Jabu Mabuza's role might be going forward, simply because I think he might be well placed to block, you know, any interference that comes from, you know, the shareholder, as you were talking about earlier on. Do you think he would, you know, perhaps take a more active role just to make sure that he's defending on more the parliamentary and government side, so that Mr. De Reiter can be allowed to, you know, continue with the job of turning around Eskom?
It's his choice of chief executive.
Yeah.
And so he must back him, and he must shield him, because, as you say, it is correct that in terms of the shareholder relationship, the shareholder should be interacting with the board and not with the executives. So let's hope so. Let's hope he can do that. I think that the other quite important point is that the Eskom board itself really needs to be enhanced with more skills. As I said, there's no engineer there. They have been promising for some time that they will put some more skilled people onto the board, and I think that'll make a big difference, because once you've got people with real know-how there, they can also act a bit as a, you know, buffer against the shareholder whose interests are largely political rather than technical.
Okay. Yeah, so I think that brings us to the end of today's discussion. It's quite an interesting one, SAA and Eskom in focus, the state-owned enterprises. Some interesting thoughts coming from our guest, Carol Payton, who is writer-at-large from The Business Day. She's ending off by saying that Eskom, there's a lot that's going on, and we hope that, you know, people like Jabu Mabuza will be able to step in and actually, you know, act as that defense for the new CEO. But she brings up an interesting point that perhaps more technical skills, especially engineering, are perhaps needed on the Eskom board. And then we have Natasha just saying that, you know, the unions can't be approaching the two SOEs, that's SAA and Eskom, in the same way, simply because their strategic value for the South African economy is so vastly different. So that's been it in terms of today's Business Day Spotlight. Thank you so much to our guests and for participating in our discussion. Remember that you can find the latest podcast of the Business Day Spotlight under the Business Day Spotlight tab on Business Live, and then on Twitter we're hashtag BD Spotlight. Remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. My name is Bin Mudiwa Gavaza, and this has been the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that we are a multimedia live production. To all our listeners, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.